Globalization might sound like a vague concept to most of us, but if you're a factory worker who's been laid off because your job has moved offshore to Asia, then you know exactly what globalization looks and feels like. Beth Macy has met a lot of people who've had that experience. As a veteran news reporter in Roanoke, Virginia, she's covered the steady dismantling of the furniture industry in Virginia and North Carolina.
Every time a factory closed down, we had gone down and done a news story from my newspaper, the Roanoke Times, but we'd never gone back and said, well, what happened to all those people?
So Macy decided to check back to find out what the aftermath of globalization is like. And she stumbled on an unexpected story. A factory owner who's bucked the trend, kept his plant open, and his American workers employed. Macy ended up writing a book about it. It's called Factory Man: How One Furniture Maker Battled Offshoring, Stayed Local, and Helped Save an American Town. Now, your book opens with John Bassett III. The scion of this Bassett Furniture, which has been going on for almost a century. He's snaking his way through the streets of a town in rural China, and he's trying to track down this factory that's copied one of his best-selling dressers and is now selling it for much cheaper.
I love this story. The first time I heard it, I kept asking about it, and to him it wasn't even a big deal. It was just part of what they were doing. They were fighting so hard to keep that factory going. And what had happened is they saw this dresser come on the market. It was a Louis Philippe dresser. It was wholesaling for $100. And they couldn't figure out how they were able to do that. And so they took it apart piece by piece in their factory, and they priced out the parts of the wood and the glue and all the supplies. And they determined that without a doubt, there was no way that this product wasn't being dumped on the market, because the price of the goods alone was less than what it would have cost just to buy the wood for it. And so he sent his son Wyatt and a translator into the hinterlands of northern China to find out where this dresser had been made, so they could find out who it was that was threatening to take the whole industry down.
And John Bassett is just this larger-than-life character who you get to know over the course of years. Give us a little sense of his personality. He certainly comes across in the book as larger-than-life, you know, full of contradictions. But boy, does he get stuff done.
Yeah, he's relentless, in a word. He thinks, eats, breathes furniture. He's, you know, he's got a legal pad by his bed at night. I don't think he's slept through the night. And, you know, since globalization hit, he's waking up in the middle of the night writing ideas down. If you're a manager for him, he'll call you at 2 a.m. if he thinks of something that he wants you to do.
Now, he takes on China in this anti-dumping case. What's the reaction to that? Again, he's sort of like an anti-union guy. He's not somebody who would sort of side with the government. How does he decide to take that on?
I think he's just doing anything he can think of. He would say he's not anti-globalization, but he would say that when China joined the WTO, they agreed to play by certain rules. You're not supposed to dump. You're not supposed to be heavily subsidized by your government. And another big complaint that they make is that the Chinese manipulate their currency, which gives them an artificially low price that they find really hard to compete with. But short a better system to sort of make sure everybody's following the rules, what it takes is a guy like John Bassett, who's willing to stay up all night and really, really fight to get and to pay millions of dollars to lawyers, by the way, to press this case. And he did. And it resulted, you know, in bringing millions back to his factory.
Now, what's interesting is that John Bassett, you know, he's living large. He's got a lot of money. He doesn't have to work as hard as he does in many respects. He lives in a nice place. And many of his contemporaries, you know, furniture company owners, are just kind of giving in and setting up shop in Asia. But he kind of decides to really fight for the American worker and fight to keep his company in the U.S. and save American jobs. Why?
I think it's a lot of things. I think it's pride. It's this legacy. It's this idea of handing this factory down that generations of his family have gotten rich from, you know? I think it's a sense of giving back. I interviewed one woman there, and her whole family works at Vaughn Bassett. And he knows these people. He says it's not like you're a Wall Street person and you pick up the phone and you say to the plant in Alabama, close down plant number 36. These are people he looks in the eye every day, and he really knows them.
Now, you're very effective at introducing readers to these factory workers who you meet and describing these towns that have just been devastated. You know, lots of dollar stores and empty storefronts and all the kind of things people see when they go in to small towns that are really suffering. And one of the people you meet is Wanda Perdue. Tell us her story.
Mm-hmm. I met Wanda outside of a computer lab at a community college. And she was one of these displaced factory workers from Stanley Furniture, which is right next to Bassett. She was just real curious. I mean, she was really hoping to get a job. She wanted to be a medical office worker. And that's what she was training for.
And she asked a key question that got you thinking.
Yes, she did. We were talking about, like, kind of where those jobs. Well, first they went to China and then Vietnam. And now a lot of the Stanley Furniture was being made in a lower wage country of Indonesia. And I said, you know, what do you think that looks like over there? She goes, I don't know. It'd be really interesting if you went. And she was curious about what the worker conditions were like, what her replacements' lives were like, and also what her old bosses did on the other side of the globe.
So you went to Indonesia. What did you find out? And what did the Indonesian workers tell you about their jobs and what the work was like for them?
They were really appreciative to have the jobs. The ones I interviewed who were doing the rough end, the line work, it was their first cash paying job for many of them. They had been subsistence farmers and they're making money for the first times in their lives. And they're finally able to send their children to school and buy uniforms and books. And that was really moving to me. And one woman told me that, you know, she hoped that her daughter would go to college one day because she had this good job. And she was very grateful that, you know, it was her first job indoors. And it was hot as heck there. And she was just really grateful for it. And when she said she hoped her daughter would go to college, the woman translating clapped her hands and jumped up and down. And, you know, that was moving to me, too, because I'm sure that's what my mom was hoping when she was a factory worker, too, that my daughter would be the first person in her family to go to college.
So you grew up and your mother worked in a factory and you've gone to college and become a journalist. And it sounds like in Indonesia, a lot of those workers are hoping for that, for the same thing for their own kids. Do you come away from writing this book thinking globalization is good or bad?
I think it's both. I mean, you know, I think it's saved us all a little bit. We can buy our blue jeans and our bedroom suits a little bit cheaper than we could have. I think it's helped the shareholders in these multinational corporations the most. I think that in these towns that were very heavily dependent on these factory jobs, it's going to be decades before they recover. And I find that really sad. And I find the people who are left behind who don't have the resources to get themselves reeducated and trained, I just find it incredibly moving what has happened to them through no fault of their own.
Beth Macy's new book is called Factory Man, How One Furniture Maker Battled Offshoring, Stayed Local, and Helped Save an American Town. Thanks, Beth.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Beth Macy forged quite a friendship with her protagonist, John D. Bassett III. You can see a video of them together at his factory at PRI.org.